Hey, it's Andrew Siciliano. The 49ers have yet another injury, and this time it's the quarterback. An early preview of Thursday night football. How much does Micah Parsons truly matter? Is Quinshon Judkins going to play this week? Plus, Cynthia Freeland's on the show. Inside coverage is next. We're going to do a show yet again. Let's do it. It is a Wednesday heading into week three right here on Inside Coverage on Yahoo, the how and the why of everything going on in the National Football League. My name is Andrew Siciliano. We appreciate you not only watching the show, but if you're listening to the pod, liking and sharing and subscribing and sending it to your friends, your neighbors, whomever. We thank you in advance for your patronage and your sharing and all those things to keep this show moving as we try to build something. As mentioned, live Monday through Thursday on yahoosports.tv. We're on the fast channel. Yahoo's got a fast channel. What is a fast channel, you ask? You have a smart TV, right? Of course you do. I'm going to hold up my smart TV remote right now. I have one off camera. You can't see it. Your smart TV has all these free channels. Go find the yahoosports.tv channel, the Yahoo Sports channel in there, and you can watch us and all the other great shows every single Monday through Thursday. Also on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. Find us there. Okay, cool. Let's welcome the other wise football. Now, I'm not going to say other wise football minds. The wise football minds. I'm just the navigator on this show. The wise football
I thought you were
going
to drop the wise part of that. Yeah, I'll take that.
Well, as soon as I said it, hi, Frank Schwab. I made it sound like I'm calling myself wise. You know Frank. Frank's here every day. And as we continue NFL Network Reunion Week, Cynthia Freeland, their data and analytics expert. It is wonderful to have you on the show as well. Hello, neighbor.
I am so happy to be reunited with you on here. Frank, it's nice to meet you. I just need to gush over Andrew for a moment because I'm going to tell you, those pipes, they are my favorite in all of the NFL. I miss working with you every single week. I'll come back anytime you want. You know, your nephew puppies, they want to say hi too at some point. So, you know, when we see Andrew walking, they get really excited and just want to play with him. But also, like, honestly, there is no better one in the biz. Andrew, that voice, the whole thing, the way you cover everything. This is so exciting for me. This is like back in the NFL Now, the best show that was on NFL Network. This is what this reminds me of.
Wow. The check's in the mail. Thank you. I'll come knock on your door and deliver it. For those who don't know, Cynthia and I are basically neighbors. She said, like, Frank run into her and the dogs and her husband, the wonderful Kyle. They live right down the street. And yes,
very nice.
We basically run into each other all the time. And it was whatever. We worked 10 years together at NFL Network. We'll share those stories at another time. But I thank you, Cynthia, for being here. Let's get to the news. Yeah. There's a lot of news. As Wednesday, we officially turned the page from the previous week to the new week, now heading into, did I say week three? I meant week two. We're heading into week two.
I was going to say you skipped
two.
Over. Let's not
get ahead of ourselves. Gosh, Madison, our producer, and I were already planning week three. Week two. Oof, let's do that. And let's start with the injuries, because there's a pretty notable one today out of Santa Clara. Kyle Shanahan is getting his 49ers ready to head on the road to New Orleans to face those upstart Saints. I'm going to call them that because they didn't look nearly as bad as people expected them to look, even in a loss week number one. Kyle Shanahan says it is a long shot for Brock Purdy to go. And if he can't go, it's going to be Mac Jones. In typical Kyle form or style, let's roll the shot. He didn't give us many details.
Whether Brock will be able to play on Sunday.
I think it's a long shot.
George Kittle's hamstring, is there any more details or just a...
No, that's going to be some time.
Is it possible that Purdy's injury could be a multi-week thing?
It's possible.
And that's the toe, more so than the shoulder.
Yes.
253 games. Guys, that's the number. Cynthia, I'll start with you because you love the math. The 49ers in 2024, last season, had 253 total player games missed to injury. Now it's Purdy. Brandon Ayuk is coming back from last year's horrible knee injury. He is on IR. Juwan Jennings has a shoulder. This is after having a calf all through training camp. George Kittle is on injured reserve. It's happening again. We've seen this movie before.
We certainly have. The bright spot is that Christian McCaffrey did play and looked great last week. So that's number one. That's at least one good thing for them. This is interesting because they have a whole new, you know, the defensive front is very young now, whole new and remade. It's not good. It's not great. Now, Mac Jones, I was there. I spent the preseason with the Denver Broncos, and one of our games was against the 49ers. So I got to see Mac Jones. He looked fine, you know, the way you would expect a backup to look, but probably not the best news for them going forward, especially considering the entire chemistry of the receiving corps hasn't been able to develop because they just haven't been available. So, I joke around with Kyle. He knows I said it. I call him a lying liar who lies. You know, he says things like, we don't know if we're going to be here on Sunday. So this feels like yet another Kyle, we don't know if we're going to be here on Sunday moment.
Yeah, that the clip of that presser brought me a lot of flashbacks to covering Mike, his father, who, yeah, didn't like talking about injuries either. Let's put it that way. Look, I don't think this was part of the math with the 49ers, because if Brock Purdy was well enough to play, he'd play. But this is a good spot in the schedule. If there is one, to not have your quarterback, the Saints might be still the worst team in the NFL. I know they were more competitive last week than we expected, Andrew, but still lost at home to the Arizona Cardinals. I think Mac Jones is still the best quarterback in this game. Like, I would take him over Spencer Rattler. I can't lie about that.
I'd agree.
Mac Jones actually played well last year. I mean, you look at the games he had with Jacksonville, really it brought Brian Thomas to life. You know, I mean, he hit him over and over and over, smart enough to do that. I think he's good enough to get the ball to Ricky Pearsall and hand it off to Christian McCaffrey, and the 49ers can get out of there with a win and say, okay, now we can reassess Brock next week. I still think the 49ers win this game. You often see teams rally around a backup quarterback, at least for the first game. I think the 49ers will do that. The defense played really well last week against Seattle. McCaffrey looked healthy. So I think there's no good time to lose your quarterback. Don't get me wrong. But if there is a time, well, it's against the Saints. Like that. Yeah, and that's the silver lining. If there is one, Andrew, I'm not trying to make it positive, but this is a tough blow for the 49ers. Like you said, bad luck again. How is this hitting a 49ers again? Usually injury luck doesn't repeat year to year, but it is for the 49ers.
Yeah, it's their MO. And after this one, they get two home games, two winnable home games. And I'll start by saying all due respect to the Cardinals and the Jaguars, but they get them both in Santa Clara. I will say this, Cynthia, I'm kind of fascinated, maybe is too strong, but I'm kind of intrigued, let's put it that way, to see how Mac Jones plays, because I maintain, and I think this was the case with Sam Darnold, certainly, that a year of quarterback rehab with Kyle Shanahan is a good thing. And I said this when Mac Jones first went to San Francisco. I said, this is going to be perfect. He's going to get a year of rehab, quarterback rehab, and then he'll hit the free agent market next year, and someone's going to go, well, he learned under Kyle for a year, so this is the next reclamation project that deserves a shot. Let's go get him on a low-money deal and see what we got. Well, now, after only a week, it looks as if we are going to see Mac Jones. I don't know if it's a full year of rehab. It's only a training camp, a preseason, and 1 week holding the clipboard. But I am kind of interested to see how he looks.
Absolutely. I mean, I do think, though, you know, you talk about the rehab. A lot of that has to do with the run game and the ability for the run game to remain consistent. So just so long as no more of these pieces get decimated, like if Christian McCaffrey stays healthy, if they can keep the run game efficient, then I think that they're going to be in okay shape. I'm not, like you said, I agree the Saints would be a decent one to go against if you have to lose Brock. Obviously, you never want to, but I Mac Jones, he didn't look that bad in preseason, but again, it's preseason, so who knows what we were even looking at. However, he seemed to be having fun with the guys on the sideline, which sounds stupid, but that's one of the things I look at to see if they can get along and if they're dudes. Or sometimes you see the backup quarterback kind of by himself off on an island. That usually doesn't go so well. So he did seem to be getting along with the other guys, which sounds very silly, but it is very, it can be predictive.
One thing, Cynthia, you said that I want to piggyback off of is you don't want to get anybody else hurt. You know, I mean, you're kind of a critical mass right now. Don't lose anybody else, but you think about Kyle's game plan going into this game. It's going to be how many carries could Christian McCaffrey handle, right? Like that's logical. Why wouldn't you load up your best player who's coming off of a season where he played, what, two games, three games? Like, I worry about that. I worry about he already got a lot of touches in week one. He's going to get a ton of touches
75%.
Right.
Yes, like, he played 75% of snaps.
And Christian McCaffrey, prime Christian McCaffrey, is used to 93, 94, 95. That's what he was playing at sometimes. But this is a different Christian McCaffrey at age 29. I worry about you're going to load him up so much, not just this week, but the rest of the time George Kittle is out. And if you lose anybody, if Purdy misses more time, it's going to become the Christian McCaffrey show. Does that wear and tear affect him by the end of the year where the 49ers really need him? This is a terrible spot for the 49ers to be in with injuries already. We said this yesterday. You deal with this in November. You deal with this in December. That sometimes happens. You don't want to be dealing with this before it's even mid-September.
No, and if they need another arm, which it looks like they do, it could be Mike White, the former Jet starter, a guy that also had a cup of coffee with the Dolphins, a guy that was featured on Hard Knocks this year. Well, he lost the job in Buffalo to Mitch Trubisky as the backup to Josh Allen. Mike White was in for a tryout today with the 49ers. All right, let's get to the Super Bowl rematch. Somehow, the way the schedule works, and guys, it's all a formula. It's all a formula. The Chiefs now, for the third consecutive year, magically draw last year's Super Bowl opponent the next year in the regular season. That's not Chiefs bias. It's not just, you know, trying to get a TV matchup.
The refs did it, Andrew. Are done the refs
years.
Did it.
The formulas are done years in advance, so pump your brakes. We do have good news out of Kansas City, and that is Andy Reid today said that Xavier Worthy is not going to go on injured reserve. Now, it does not sound like he's going to play this week at all, but he's not going to go on injured reserve. So the idea that he'd be out a month, which is what IR would mean, right now does not seem like the likely answer. So he's not going to go into reserve. But Travis Kelce came out today and owned it. Because if you go back to the game in Brazil, first quarter, first possession, Kelce and Worthy collide, and then Worthy's got to leave the game with a separated shoulder. Travis Kelce flat out said it. Listen, I am a 13-year veteran, and this is on the podcast, the New Heights podcast. I have to know how to run my route at depth, at the right depth. And basically, it's my fault that I took out Xavier Worthy. I have to be better. So he owned it to his credit. It's on the New Heights podcast. If you want to listen to it, go listen to it. Cynthia, the math is bad, however, because without Xavier Worthy, this team, and without Rashee Rice, this team can't stretch the field. And if that's the case, I know Hollywood Brown could be that guy, but we haven't really seen it yet. If that's the case, we go back to last year's dink and dunk offense.
I mean, okay, so first things first, you did see some deep passes return, even when you didn't have Xavier Worthy in that game, which is a good thing to see as just a fan of football, right? Patrick Mahomes throwing deep was a thing of beauty. 44 passing touchdowns in like the first, you know, five seasons of his career. And then the past 2 years, it's been a little bit less. But when we're talking about, you know, the potential for things to be different, what could be different in this game against the Eagles? I think they go back to being really efficient using 12 personnel again. It is what they were using last season, but it did end up working for them. You know, I think at this point they need to get the win. They need to get the stink off of whatever happened in Brazil off of their team so that they have a chance to move forward and see how does their young O-line look, their new remade left side of that O-line, how does that work? And ultimately, can they get the freaking run game to work? Because if they can't figure out these explosive runs, it's going to be Patrick Mahomes' legs, Patrick Mahomes on third and 500, all of those things that we see that we ask of Patrick Mahomes and we've come to expect him to deliver. But it is a hard way to live if you're expecting that every single week. So I think we go back to seeing a lot of tricks out of 12, so two tight end sets.
Yeah, it almost has to be that way. I'm going to say, like, I write, you know, my picks for Thursday morning. I was writing it today before the show. And I'm in analytics. Cynthia, you're one of the best data people in the NFL, right? Covering the NFL. So we both are on that same page. And I basically wrote that, yeah, the Eagles, there's no edge I can give the Chiefs right now on paper. No X's and O's analysis that I can say, I think the Chiefs win this game. I think that their offense is in trouble against the Eagles. I think the Eagles are going to be, they have Jalen Carter coming back. Obviously, the Chargers just ripped apart the Chiefs secondary with a lot of play action. And I got to the end of it. And I copied it all and I deleted it. And I said, is Patrick Mahomes really going to go 0-2? Really? Like, Patrick Mahomes is an underdog in his career, 11-4 straight up, 12-2-1 against the spread. This is when Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs come alive, when everybody in the world, including me usually, is saying the Chiefs are dead, the Chiefs are done, they're going to go and they're going to lose this game. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how Andy Reid pulls this off. I don't know how Patrick Mahomes pulls this off, but somehow, some way, I think the Chiefs win on Sunday because I just can't see them going 0-2.
Frank, you want the crazy stat? And this isn't analytics. This is just like basic, simple third grade math. They've never lost with Mahomes three in a row, including the postseason.
Right.
They've never lost three in a row.
They've never Mahomes.
And they've only been in this scenario four times. Only four times with Mahomes have they lost back-to-back games.
Cynthia, am I nuts?
What are we doing here?
Is this like, are we like buying into this weird narrative like Patrick Mahomes never loses, but I can't give you any clear black and white reason why I think the Chiefs are the better team. I just think the Mahomes magic comes through and they win. Okay, please.
I have some reasons. Well, first and foremost, I'm not going to be popular in Philadelphia this week. Let's just say the mentions will
nobody's popular in Philadelphia. They hate everybody.
Even the Eagles aren't that popular in Philadelphia.
They actually hate themselves. They win by four. Anyways, that's a whole other show. But ultimately, there's two things. One thing that we didn't see happen in the Chiefs Chargers game was the Chiefs being able to do the thing that Steve Spagnuolo will bang his head against the wall to get them to do. And that's not allow any sort of yak, not yards after contact, not yards after the catch. Last year, they were exceptional at limiting anyone from getting those extra yards. They were the best. They had the fewest missed tackles by percentage in the National Football League. And of course, Saquon Barkley made them look foolish in that regard in the Super Bowl, etc. Now, you fast forward that to what they're going to do in this matchup. Perhaps, you know, we talk about trap games, you know, in the regular season. Maybe that first one was a bit of a trap game. Maybe they didn't expect all three of those wide receivers to be so efficient from the Chargers. But I think that they're expecting anything that Jalen Hurts, that Saquon Barkley, that A.J. Brown. I mean, I would imagine in the beginning of the game, they double team A.J. Brown and don't let him have any sort of catches so he gets in his head. And when A.J. Brown gets in his head, things can get wonky. So there are some strategies that we've seen the Chiefs enact against teams like the Eagles and the Eagles specifically that I think are forecasting things to be at least very close. And I actually have I was a little surprised when I first saw it, but I think that the Chiefs win at home. It's bananas to me that we in one game throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know?
True. And let me add on one thing, because AJ, I think that, Andrew, if I could real quick, one thing that I think really screwed them up in week one, getting back to your original point, was losing Xavier Worthy on the third play. Because you think about what their game plan had to be. It had to be, well, we got nobody else. Xavier Worthy is our entire game plan. And then on third play, you lose him. Like, you can't adjust to that. But they still almost beat the Chargers. This week, they go in, I assume, knowing that Xavier Worthy is not going to play in this game. You can. Right. It's a completely different obstacle for Andy Reid to get through at that point.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And A.J. Brown only had, as Cynthia is referring to, their only one target in the opener Thursday night. The Eagles pulled it out. We had a weather delay. We focused on the spitting. One target. So if that's the case, he's going to be reading a lot of books on the bench in Kansas City with a 425 kick and a national TV. Well, not national, but a massive doubleheader audience there for CBS. I want to get into Jalen Carter thing because there's the tie-in. The Chiefs lost Xavier Worthy on the third play. The Eagles lost Jalen Carter before they even took a snap defensively here. Nick Sirianni was asked repeatedly, like four or five times today, to comment on the Jalen Carter suspension. He wouldn't say anything. Like, he kept saying, we're going to keep it in-house. He's not going to talk about whether or not Carter has learned a lesson. This is a Zach Berman tweet reading off the screen what he thought of the league's discipline, whether the league's discipline would factor into any potential internal discipline. As we are taking the air here, we're getting quotes from Jalen Hurts saying they've moved on. You know, he doesn't want to talk about it either. Everything is staying in-house. Nick Sirianni, Frank, used to be the fun guy on the podium. Not a mushroom, but the fun guy on the podium. He has gotten so bleeping serious in the last year.
And that's what Philly will do to you, right? And you know that, you know, he probably got up in front of the team at some point this week, probably Wednesday, and said, guys, we're not going to talk about this, because then it becomes a bigger story. Like, if you start talking about it, Jalen Hurts comes out and says, yeah, we're really disappointed in Jalen Carter. What's the headline the next day all over Philly? What is Philly Sports Talk Radio talking about the whole next day? So I know it's not good for us. We didn't get any good sound bites out of Nick today, but I get it. I totally understand that they want this story done. Like, they don't want to be talking about Jalen Carter's suspension beyond, like, however much they've talked about it already.
I think if I'm Creed Humphrey, I'm figuring out how to get into Jalen Hurts' head. I mean, obviously there's some immaturity Jalen that you Carter's could head. Exploit. Yes, excuse me. Yeah. I'm getting into Jalen Carter. Excuse me. I'm getting into Jalen Carter's head. If I'm Creed Humphrey, I'm sitting there being like, what can I do to throw him off his game? How can I exploit some of this potential immaturity so that I can get him to be a hothead and do something stupid again? Because I'd really prefer to play without him than him to be on the field. So I just think it gives teams a recipe. I'm sure part of what Coach Sirianni said to the team was like, you got to let it go. Like, there's nothing they can do that will allow us to lose the best player on our defense, perhaps the team, to something stupid.
Yeah. And with or without Jalen Carter, and he will be out there, assuming he doesn't do anything stupid, how the Eagles front seven gets after Patrick Mahomes and attacks that rebuilt Chiefs offensive line is going to be a fascinating storyline on Sunday afternoon. Also pretty interesting how Travis Hunter's play time on either side of the ball changes in week two for the Jaguars. What Liam Cohen had to say about that coming up, and also the latest on Quinshon Judkins, why he wasn't at practice today when many people thought he would be. Cynthia Freeland's on the show. Frank Schwab, I'm Andrew Siciliano. Don't go anywhere. Inside Coverage returns. It's Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. That's Frank Schwab in Center Square. Cynthia Freeland on the right of your screen from NFL Network joins us on today's show as well. Hi, my name is Andrew. Let's get to the rest of week two, including Liam Cohen and his Jaguars getting ready for their second time out there, Cynthia, with the Travis Hunter experiment. Liam on the podium today did concede that, yeah, maybe we play him a little bit more on defense this week. Maybe the Jaguars are in Cincinnati to face the Bengals. Snap count for week one, 42 on offense, 6 on defense, 42 of the 66 offensive snaps they took, and really not much action at all defensively. Cynthia, when he was lined up as a wide receiver on offense, he was primarily lined up in the slot. What did you see?
Well, tracking what he did in week one was a little bit like what we see from rookies, meaning it wasn't the most precise route running. That's not something that he was really known for yet. And he looked a little bit like he was adjusting to the speed of the defense that he was facing. Now, it wasn't the hardest defense in the Carolina Panthers, but he didn't go out there and look like he was already, you know, in veteran form, right? It looked like a rookie performance. On defense, the 6 snaps, whatever. It's hard because then I asked some of my, you know, some of our mutual friends who played both of these positions, and it's just the meetings happen at literally the same time. So when you're looking at the opportunity to play on offense or on defense, you kind of can't go through all of the installs for everything with your teammates because those meetings are happening at the same time. So you can't be in two places at once. Maybe he can, but I'm unaware of how anyone can be in two places at once. So it's interesting to see how they adjust going forward. Hopefully it looks a little bit crisper in this next go around. The Bengals secondary is a better maybe situation in game 2. I don't know that the Carolina secondary wasn't maybe the best one either, but I'm curious to see how they evolve his game going forward, because it was kind of a scribble a little bit in week one.
And I do wonder about just the situation. First of all, it's week one. I mean, are you really going to throw Travis Hunter out there for 90 snaps? Probably not. That's tough for a rookie in his first game. Maybe ease him in slowly. He also missed the third preseason game with an injury. Yes, they probably held him out because it was preseason, but still he missed a little bit of time. So still easing his way back in. And third, it's the Carolina Panthers. They were up early in that game. It looked pretty obvious early on that they were the better team. At what point does Liam Cohen say, what am I going to do? I'm going to throw Travis Hunter out there for 35 defensive snaps in a blowout? I wonder about this week because the Bengals are the Bengals. And you're on the road. You're an underdog. You're facing Joe Burrow and two of the best receivers in the game. Will we see Travis Hunter play more cornerback then? I think if you don't see him at much a cornerback this week, it's just not going to happen this year. I've said often, and I'm wishcasting it, and I get that, that I think Travis Hunter should play both ways, not 100% of the time because he can't do that, but as much as he can handle on both sides. I'm a little bit rooting for the story because I've never really seen that in my lifetime other than pretty much Dion in 1995. But I just wonder what the Jaguars are thinking at this point, because honestly, if all they're going to do is play him at receiver in the slot and line him up 5-6 plays at cornerback a game, why move up to the second pick? Why trade as much as you did to go up to number two to get him if he's just a receiver? I don't think he was worth that as a receiver. I love Travis Hunter. I think he's a great, great player, deserved the Heisman, all that kind of stuff. But if you are going to pay what they paid to go up to number two and get him, I think he's got to play both ways. Am I wrong about that? That just seems like such an overpay for a slot receiver if that's all he's going to be.
No, I agree with you.
I would argue
with that one. I was just going to say this to me, you guys both make great points. This story to me is kind of like week one overreaction in microcosm here. It's one game. Like the idea that he was going to play 115 snaps, which is what he averaged over the last two seasons at Colorado, is absurd. You can't play 115 snaps in the NFL. It don't work that way. Like we had Deion Dawkins on yesterday saying that his body still hasn't recovered and he doesn't know when it will after 89 snaps for the Bills on Sunday night in that classic. And Josh Allen, by the way, brought the same thing up on the podium today in Buffalo. Like 89 snaps. It's a 1 o'clock game Sunday. Like that game finished at midnight on Sunday night. Like we've got to get our bodies ready this week. So I think they need to ease Travis Hunter in. I do think he's we all agree, he's a dynamic wide receiver. It's one game. It's one game. I would like to see him play corner a little bit more. I also think you should ask the question, like, is putting him out there against Jamar Chase or T. Higgins, the indoctrination and Joe Burrow, especially an angry Bengals team after the Browns punched them in the mouth in the second half? They had -7 yards in the second half, net yards, as a team. You know what? I would take him out of the defensive game plan this week just because of that.
I mean, I would say, listen, and it's not going to be like the sexiest take, but they moved up to get him, and that means that they mortgage next year, right? So if it takes more than a couple of weeks, maybe even the whole year, to get him to play at least a level on defense that you might like, you're still getting a good return on your investment because you've already, you know what it is going into next year's draft. So I understand everyone likes wants everything now, but maybe a little bit of patience here and allow the man to learn how the NFL and the speed of the NFL and the game of the NFL really works. Because so you could argue, you know, is Joe Burrow going to go out mad? Jamar Chase is one of those receivers that didn't get any action in week one, right? He did not have the game that he's used to having. So you would have gone against an angry Jamar Chase. Okay. That doesn't sound great. Right. So, I would say let's just, you know, I want him to be great and I want him to play on both sides, but I think it'd probably be better to do one thing at a time and then the other thing as opposed to trying to do everything at once.
Cynthia, we have no time, no reason for patience around here. Come on, we cover the NFL. This is 18 one-week seasons. That's what we do around here. Patience, what? Come on.
Yeah, which is kind of what it feels like. And in Cleveland, they have no patience. Oh, by the way, for getting Quinshon Judkins back on the field. He didn't practice today. And when Kevin Stefanski revealed before practice this morning that Quinshon wasn't going to be in the building, wouldn't give many details, people thought, like, wait, what's going on? Here's the answer. He was in New York. This was planned. They knew it was going to happen. They knew this last week that he had to go to New York to meet, as to meet with the league as part of the personal conduct investigation after the incident in Florida over the summer. No charges were filed, or all the charges were dropped. Better said, whatever. The case has gone away and he's now back with the team. This idea, however, that he might be able to play this week is very much up in the air because he isn't at practice on Wednesday. He will be, from everything we understand, back at practice and on the field Thursday, so we could get 2 days in. Cynthia, what stands out to me about the Browns, well, a lot of things stood out week number one, but they thought they were going to be able to run the ball better. Conversely, Cincinnati has not been able to stop the run, but they went out and got TJ Slayton. You throw BJ Hill in the middle. Chris Jenkins, second year guy out of Michigan, second round pick. Those guys had a heck of a performance. Or the Browns O-line started really slowly. I don't know that Quinshon Judkins is going to be like the magic answer to all of a sudden start running the football this week against the Ravens if he is somehow on the field.
That was kind of my asterisk there. I mean, I actually think Quinshon Judkins will be a difference maker over the long haul. However, do you really want to get a Ravens team, Roquan Smith specifically, that just went through what they went through in Buffalo and are probably looking to kind of get that feeling out of that taste out of their mouth? That's, I think in general, I picked up Quinshon Judkins in fantasy because I do think by the end of the season, he's going to help me out. But as of right now, this is a really tough test. But you could also argue maybe it's better what you don't know, right? He has no idea how hard this is. So go out there, kid. See what you can do.
That I've said, you know, we me and Andrew and Charles Robinson talked about this weeks ago, and I kind of maybe overstated things by saying I think it's just gonna be a lost year for Quinshon Judkins, and I still stand by that in some ways, where we're talking about he's
disagree.
Missing Wednesday. I know you do, and I get it. I understand what you mean, but I just he has missed a lot of time. And he was there in the offseason, OTAs, all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
But you miss preseason, you miss training camp, you're missing time during the season. We're talking about, I mean, like any other rookie, we're talking about, like, really, we're going to just practice him on Thursday, throw him out on Sunday against the Ravens? Like, I think that's crazy. At some point, maybe late in the year, he gets it, but what's the trust level the coaches have in him? Because they haven't seen him very much in real life situations. I'm just worried that this whole season is just going to be a lot less for Quinshon Judkins than we thought. Like, we thought he was going to come in, be the man, early second round pick. He's going to carry the load, 1,000-yard guy, maybe, who knows? But I just think that's kind of gone. I think Dylan Sampson looked really good in his first game, especially
fantastic
ball and how many routes he ran. I just think the train has left the station a little bit. Maybe Quinshon could catch it at the next stop, but it's tough. It's just asking so much of him as a rookie. No training camp, no preseason, no week one, no Wednesday of week two. To just, hey, at some point, go out on the field and perform, you know, get 20 carries like that. It's just a lot for a rookie, for anyone.
I think there's two positions you can do that. I think pass rushers can do it. And I think running backs can do it. Pass rushers are the two that have a little bit of a shortened learning curve just based on what the job actually is. But I agree with you. However, I don't discount the opportunity for them to use two running backs all season long. I think Kevin Stefanski will take all of the playmakers he can get, you know?
I mean, Isaiah Bond started
that was
the game.
Always the plan.
Like, they need something. Harold Fan was basically their slot receiver. Yeah, they need playmakers a lot.
The first three plays of the offensive plays last week for the Browns. Snap number one went to Dylan Sampson. Snap number two went to Harold Fannin. Snap number three, or play number three, went to Isaiah Bond. So the first three were the rookies. And then the first touchdown came from Raheem Sanders, Rocket Sanders, the rookie running back out of South Carolina, who they claimed at the final cutdown off waivers from the Chargers. Had a really nice preseason here with the Chargers, over 100 yards and a touchdown. He got the first touchdown of the season. So it is a rookie season. Really, across the board, Carson Schwessinger was the leading tackler. Mason Graham played well. All six of those guys contributed. I don't think anyone thinks that if Quinshon plays this week, he's going to be some kind of bell cow against the Ravens on the road in his first NFL game. That's not the case. And the Browns also had not committed in any way at all to him definitely playing this week. They had a 2-week roster exemption. He only signed his contract last Saturday evening after arriving Saturday morning into Cleveland. He was in the building on Sunday, and they would like to get him on the field. Now, I would like to, as well, maybe get him into the league office on a Tuesday. How about a Monday rather than a Wednesday? But they're not going to do you any favors. He's there on a Wednesday. He'll be back Wednesday evening, one would think, and then back on the field Thursday. My gut tells me, and this is my gut only, that with only 2 days of practice, and really Thursday is the Browns' high-energy practice, if you will, their most focused practice of the week. I don't know that he's going to play this week. I don't have any inside information there, but that's what my gut tells me. To your point, Frank, Dylan didn't look great. First guy never brought him to the ground. He's not a big dude. I mean, he's 5'10", maybe. He's 200 pounds, but he's pretty sturdy. His contact balance was absurd, and he had 8 receptions. The NFL leader right now for receptions after only 1 week has 10. Dylan Sampson has 8. So if you're in a PPR league, he had 93 yards from scrimmage a week ago. He right now is the guy. But Cynthia, you're right. It is definitely going to be a backfield by committee. And you're probably right, though, picking up Quinshon and stashing him on your fantasy bench. So again, Judkins expected back on the field Thursday by the Browns, back from New York, and no guarantee he's going to play Sunday. The Browns have a 2-week roster exemption. Week 2 begins Thursday at Lambeau Field. Coming up next with Cynthia Freeland and Frank Schwab, our early look at TNF, the Packers and the Commanders on Inside Coverage. We are back on Inside Coverage here on Yahoo. Frank Schwab, Andrew Siciliano, and the great Cynthia Freeland from NFL Network joining us as well. Hello, friends. Let's get to Thursday Night Football, because that is how Week 2 begins. It's how every week begins, obviously. And it begins on Prime Video this year at Lambeau Field. There is no better nighttime venue. There are a couple that are really good, don't get me wrong. Like Seattle's great as a nighttime venue. Mm. There are others that are cool as well. But for my money, Lambeau is the best nighttime venue. And we've got an amazing game. We've got the Packers with Micah Parsons. We've got Jaden Daniels and the Commanders. We have the two teams that got knocked out by the Eagles last year, lost in both the regular season and the postseason. Cynthia, here's what blew me away getting ready for this one today. And honestly, I had no idea. So the Packers have the youngest roster of the NFL. I think that was the case last year. Big deal. The Commanders have the oldest roster in the NFL. The oldest. They have, what's the stat here about the Niners? The oldest average roster since the 97 Steve Mariucci coached 49ers in week one. What?
Now, I knew they were the oldest. I did not know they were oldest since Mooch, you know?
There's a Mooch angle here.
Mooch. I'm so glad Mooch made it into the show. He is the best. We love Mooch. It's funny because, you know, I think that the Commanders having such an old roster will eventually come around to bite them a little bit, especially, you know, as we see the attrition for injuries over the course of the season, which we see every season. But I think in this game could actually be an advantage for them. I know Micah Parsons was a big deal. I know against the Lions, it looked really good for the Packers in that defense. But Jaden Daniels' ability to scramble and his ability to change the game with his leg is a big difference between Jared Goff, who's a pocket passer, and this particular game on Thursday. So I'm curious to see how, like, does Deebo Samuel, who also knows how to dice up this defense, does he get past basically the secondary? Outside of Xavier McKinney is very targetable. So do they find an area where Deebo in space? Terry McLaurin was pretty quiet in week one. Does Terry McLaurin maybe on the perimeter get some action? I think this is a closer game than people might expect. That number that says 3.5 down there, feels like 3 or 2 might be a better situation to think about and more fun for us to watch.
By the way, Andrew, real quick, I need to add on. You said it's the best. Lambeau Field is the best venue at night. It's also the best at Sunday at noon Central Time. It's the best at 3:25 on Sunday. It would be the best on Wednesday morning or Friday at 1 a.m.
Totally.
That's a Wisconsinite
Please
me coming out.
Please don't have a
Lambeau.
Game on
well,
Wednesday morning.
You know what? Oh, actually, Frank, I am going to tip the cap to you and everyone in Wisconsin, despite the fact that I'm not a dairy person and I can't stand the fact that there's a sign every 50 feet on the highway for cheese curds. And beyond that, you have all these state routes that are named for letters, but they're not sequential. So like State Route J comes after State Route A, which makes no sense whatsoever, but I digress. Lambeau Field
is the Wrigley. As a
Midwesterner,
I can tell you that's just how we do our alphabet.
That's how we do
it. It doesn't make sense.
We're goofy that way. We're goofy that way, Andrew. And yes, Lambeau too much spotted cow
is the
in Wisconsin.
Yankee
that's
Stadium.
What happens, yeah.
Is the Wrigley, it is the palace.
Fenway.
If you have not been to Lambeau Field, sports fans, totally. Football fans, you need to make a pilgrimage. Just go. And when you walk in for the first time, it's kind of like Augusta or at Wimbledon, and I'm lucky to have gone to both of those. When you walk in for the first time, you look around, you're like, all right, I get it. I get it. Like, mm-hmm. This is amazing. And you're right, Frank, whether it's at 8 o'clock at night or at noon central, so 7 o'clock at night or noon central, it's the same. The
Absolutely.
Floor is yours.
It is. It's beautiful. And it's just, it's weird that Green Bay, the Packers existing is a miracle. Like, go back and look at the history of the Green Bay Packers. There's no, if you've ever been to Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I've been many, 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 many times, it is basically a really, really small town with one of the great sports venues kind of right in the middle of it. Back when I covered them a million years ago, it was like there was a Kmart and there was a gas station with a Subway. Here's Lambeau Field. Here's a Pizza Hut. Here's like it's absolutely crazy how Green Bay, Wisconsin has an NFL team. I love it so much. Now let's talk about the game itself and not just gush about Lambeau Field. It is a bucket list item. Please go do that because it's awesome. But this game, I'm kind of against you, Cynthia. There might be a letdown for the Packers here. They put so much into that Lions game where, wow, we beat the Lions. Maybe a little bit of letdown 4 days later. But I'm kind of just having the angle of maybe we just saw the Super Bowl favorites play on Sunday. The way they dominated the Lions, and I'm not off the Lions bandwagon for the long term. I think the Lions are going to be a good team. I just think they ran up against a buzzsaw week one. The Green Bay Packers are a really, really good football team. And until proven otherwise, Micah Parsons is going to keep getting more snaps as it goes. Maybe not on a Thursday night, but when Jordan Love has to throw more, he looked really efficient, looked surgical out there. Just didn't need to throw a lot in the second half against the Lions because they've dominated them so much. I already had pegged the Commanders as a regression candidate. The fourth down stuff wasn't going to repeat. The Hail Marys and the overtime wins, all that stuff wasn't going to repeat. I think the Commanders are going to take a step back this year, and I think the Packers are full steam ahead. That was the best team I saw in week one, and until I see differently, I'm going to continue to think that.
I mean, I don't disagree with you that they looked incredible in week one. My hesitation lies in, well, number one, you heard it here first. I think Jeff Hafley will be a coach candidate come January. That's the defensive coordinator of the Green Bay
and
Packers.
And not just because he was the BC head coach?
No. No. Mostly because if you look at those simulated pressures last year alone, when none of his guys were able to generate pressures for him. I mean, they did it the second highest rate, but it freaking worked. And they didn't have any guys who were really actually bringing the heat. They just scared people into thinking they were going to bring the heat. So I think Hafley's a name to watch on the coaching search. And we're starting it already now. But I'm looking at the offense and I'm looking at what Jordan Love didn't have to do, and it was overcome any adversity. And I don't know what we're going to see with all of these different injuries. I mean, they keep having guys on their injury report. He threw a pass to 10 different pass catchers in that game. That could be difficult. You know, that almost felt like you're showing off a little bit, right? Like, okay, we can throw anywhere we want to. But ultimately, what happens if the Commanders go down and score first? Now the Packers are in more obvious passing situations. I just want to see them, after having not had this preseason or any as much time together in the before the season started, if the chemistry is still there, if they kind of get their mojo all together, or if it's just like you're going to throw to Tucker Kraft a bunch, or you're going to rely on the tight ends. Because Matthew Golden, okay, whatever, but like I didn't see the adversity and the overcoming of the adversity, and I certainly, you know, I didn't see a lot of adversity for the Commanders either, but I know the Commanders are at least a little feisty and they're going to have Jaden Daniels run and use his legs.
What's scary for me is how much better, and yeah, I agree with you on Jeff Hafley as well, and he also is one of the first guys, joking about BC, Cynthia went to BC, he's one of the first guys who, as a college head coach, kind of said, you know what, I'm good. I don't want to deal with the transfer portal. I don't want to deal with having to re-recruit the guys that are already enrolled in school and on my roster after the spring game when they get a better offer to go somewhere else. I can't compete, even in the ACC, at a smaller school in terms of budget like BC. So I'm out. I'd rather be a DC in the NFL or any position coach in the NFL. He's a coordinator for a good team and a Super Bowl contender. And I agree with you. If he keeps his defense playing this way and the way it did last year, then yeah, he's going to be a head coach. What's scary to me is how much better this defense is going to be when Micah Parsons actually has a higher snap count. He was on the field for what, 29 snaps week number one?
45%, 45%, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 25%. The Packers concede that he lobbied to be out there as much as he did. He was out there 44.6% of the snaps. He had one sack. He had three quarterback pressures. According to Next Gen Stats, he had a quarterback pressure on his very first snap on Jared Goff. He helped force a pick with that pressure. They're only going to get better. And yeah, it is scary, even for a mobile quarterback like Jaden Daniels. And they are the best team in the division right now. It was the best division in football a year ago. And I can say right now, they are the best team in that division, which is a week one overreaction. I realize once Christian Watson gets back on the offensive side, then that side of the ball gets even better. Josh Jacobs has a touchdown in like 10 straight games. I'm not saying they're a juggernaut, but Frank, Wisconsin guy, I'd feel good about them.
Yeah, trust me. I got a lot of friends from back home that are really, really excited about the Packers right now. Like I said, like you just, and maybe that's a 1 week thing where we look back and we were like, okay, the Packers are just good, not great, but I don't know. That looked like a great game to me. It really did. Like you said, Micah Parsons played 45% of the snaps. That's it. And he was beating Penei Sewell like a drum. Penei Sewell is one of the best players in the NFL, period. Not, I've said this, not one of the best linemen in the NFL. One of the best players in the NFL. And Micah Parsons just took him to task in that game and said afterwards, buckle up because it's going to be a rivalry a long time. I love that, by the way. I think this Packers team has earned a benefit of the doubt going forward to be, okay, you are a Super Bowl contender. You're in that very, very small group of teams. There's not many. There's six, seven teams. The only thing, Cynthia, that I worry about is Jaden Daniels, because he is that dude. He really is. Like, it is always, as somebody who picks games and maybe bets on games once in a while, you hate to be on the other side of Jaden Daniels, because it is like, it is a nightmare for 60 minutes. He's already that guy in the NFL. He's the you know, in the horror movie, he just won't die. He's the villain in that. He's so good. You hate going against him, especially in a primetime game.
I'm not saying that the Packers aren't a Super Bowl contender, but I am saying that if there's a team, at least early on in the tenure of Micah Parsons in with the Green Bay Packers, the Commanders are used to playing him. It's not their first time seeing him. Mm-hmm. It's not even their second. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a team that has familiarity with what he can do. I mean, that 20% pressure rate since entering the league, crazy. So I just have a Dan Quinn. If there's a guy who could have an answer, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury. Remember, at the beginning of seasons, Cliff Kingsbury is always electric with the game planning. We've seen, you know, all of those Cardinals games for many years. He can figure some stuff out, especially early in the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if you know, they come out and they just, Jaden Daniels could, whatever the rushing number is, which I don't know what that means because I work for the NFL, so I certainly would never bet on anything. But whatever that rushing number is, you might want to consider more than it.
For the record,
he's that dude. He really is.
For the record, you're both right, and I don't do those things either because I am also under that league umbrella.
Yeah, me either.
Nor, for the
me
record,
either.
Do I care. Guys, I mean, care about doing those things.
You
it
should,
just doesn't interest
but
me.
If you could, I mean,
I don't.
It was just like you signed this thing. Not you, Frank.
No.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, that I can't confirm or deny that.
You know what? Let's move on. Okay. Who knows? Let's do that. Okay. Let's move on. Speaking of the Cowboys, and yes, Dan Quinn used to coach, obviously, Micah Parsons in Dallas, coached against him last year as well in his first year as head coach of the Commanders. How do you find pass rush now in Dallas with Micah Parsons gone? Remember, it's about stopping the run, which they did do a good job in the second, third, and fourth quarter against the Eagles, primarily when Nick Sirianni kept running Saquon right into the middle of that Cowboys D-line. They brought in Jadeveon Clowney today, well-traveled edge player, the former number one overall pick. Some people like mistakenly refer to Jadeveon Clowney as a pass rusher. He has not been a pass rusher in years. He is more of a set-the-edge run stopper, still a productive player. But Frank, do we think that Clowney somehow magically, if he does sign, and we don't know that he's going to, Brian Schottenheimer today said we had him in, we kicked the tires. That doesn't solve their edge issue.
You too. I want you to think ahead to like year 2033, 2034. Jadeveon Clowney's going to be on a one-year deal with some team. That's just what he's going to do for like the next 15 years. This is Jadeveon
Clowney. Not only will
Clowney,
it be a one-year deal. It'll be a one-year
always
deal
when
it doesn't come
always
to camp. Never, and
yeah,
he won't
right?
Come
like,
camp.
He's gotten this
It'll
thing
be a
figured out.
Deal
I don't got to do
figures
pre-season
out in late August. Yes.
Yeah, the Domikong Su collects some checks year by year by year by being a mercenary. Jadeveon Clowney is still a productive player, like you said. He's not going to get 10 sacks, but yes, can set the edge just as well as anybody is still in the NFL, can help stop the run, which Jerry Jones put a high premium on, I guess, because he kept talking about that in a press conference, trying to justify trading Micah Parsons away. So it's a fine fit. It's just funny that we have this big name overall, first overall pick many, many years ago. I remember the hit he had against Michigan and the Outback Bowl and all that kind of stuff. But it's not really moving the needle for the Dallas Cowboys. Like, it's fun because it's a big name going to the Cowboys. He's going to be a productive member of their defense, but Jadeveon Clowney at this point in his career is just kind of one of those, oh yeah, that's right, he had that year with the Cowboys in 2025 type of dudes.
I think the Cowboys would be happy to take anything they can get. And I thought Matt Eberflus had a nice game plan against the Eagles in week one. So as much as I wasn't expecting it to look that good, I will say this week, a nice remedy is a division game against the Giants. So perhaps that is one of the remedies.
We are here every Monday through Thursday live, 6:30 Eastern time, and always on your favorite podcast platform. Go ahead, download us, and download Thursday's episode as well, where Ryan Fitzpatrick will join us from the Prime Video desk, ready for Lambeau and ready for week two, the Packers and the Commanders. For Cynthia Freeland, for Frank Schwab, I'm Andrew Siciliano. So long, everybody.